Putting the Scat in Eschatology. It's the Drew Marshall Show.
Folks, a guy that we had on our show just last year, I think, and it's rare for me to go back to guess this quickly, but boy, his books are hot. People love what he's talking about. New York Times best-selling author Joel Rosenberg on the phone with us. Just enjoying our St. Patrick's Day special. We've had a couple of Irish guests on, and then we've got you.
Well, I have no Irish in me. It's it's Jewish and English. I'm part, but I love the Irish.
Well, don't we all though at this particular time of the year? So, listen, Joel. I don't know if you probably don't remember because you've done so many interviews. But you know, I'm the guy who interviewed you last year who said, "I don't get what you do. I don't understand the end time stuff. It confuses me. I genuinely just kind of, you know, ho-hum my way through this stuff." But what I find is every time a pope gets elected or every time a new president comes in or something weird goes down in the Middle East, the end times conspiracists, it's like Christmas for them. They open up all their wacky packages and they get all excited about the potential end of the world. And that's just that's the world you live in, man. You're the expert of the wackiness.
Well, I am not excited about the end of the world. in fact, I'm you know, look, let's just put some context for listeners who may not have heard the interview last year. I do remember absolutely, and I'm glad to be back with you, Drew. I'm a failed political consultant in the United States. Every political leader I ever worked for lost their elections or decided to retire from politics. So I worked for a number of Israeli leaders, including Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Now, when I worked for Netanyahu, that was back in 2000. I was on a small team of American consultants that were complementing his Israeli team, and we were on what he called his comeback campaign team. Now, you'll recall that it took him 9 more years to come back. And so I don't want to overstate my role in certainly in American or Israeli politics, but that's my background.
Yeah.
Is as a senior advisor to a number of U.S. and Israeli leaders and working closely with intelligence officials, generals, military. That's not my field. My field is communications, but that was my world. Then I switched to moving into writing both novels and nonfiction books about things that could happen in the Middle East and that might happen. We pray that they don't happen. Hmm. Now, I am an evangelical Christian from a Jewish background on my father's side, and I have a fascination with it, admittedly. I mean, right out front, a deep interest in the Bible and in Bible prophecy. But I do think that the whole world of the study and communication of Bible prophecy has largely been either ceded to, taken over by, or something, by people who seem like they're from Roswell, New Mexico.
Yeah.
Now, that may not resonate in Canada as much as it does in the United States.
No, it totally...
What I mean is people are a little, you know, a little spooked out by this stuff and seem a little more happy about judgment than about mercy.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to bring, for those of us who believe it's true, and I'm one of them, that these things are mysteries. I mean, prophecy is a mystery, a series of them. We don't know exactly how they're going to play out. But we don't exactly know when they're going to play out. But for those of us who take it seriously, what I believe is you need to treat it seriously, not like a comic book or, you know, an episode of The Twilight Zone, but say, what does the Bible say? And is it possible that we could see these things happen in our lifetime? And I would say one specific note on that, Drew, it's just again as the setup.
Yeah.
For those who are skeptics, and obviously there are many are skeptics, like, you know, you don't really believe the Bible's true. I understand that. But I would just note that we have seen some major Bible prophecies come true in our lifetime, and they're notably centered around the rebirth of the state of Israel after 2,000 years of not being a state, the return of Jewish people to the Holy Land after centuries of exile, and Israel making the deserts bloom and rebuilding the ancient ruins. That's just four major end times Bible prophecies that are sort of irrefutably, you know, either fulfilled or in the process of being fulfilled, that everyone, even a skeptic or a cynic, would say, well, that is true. The Bible's the only or one of the few books on the planet that said those four things would happen. And I think it raises an important question. If those things, which even the church fathers, if you're a Christian or a student of Christendom, even the many church fathers thought those four things would never literally come true, the fact that they have does, I think, merit, warrant exploration, study of the rest of these issues to say, you know what? The Bible has been proven true in the past. We maybe want to look at the other things that the Bible says is coming, are coming in the future.
Yeah, well said. Well said. Joel Rosenberg on the phone with us, New York Times best-selling author, and his latest doozy that's dropped, as all the kids now say, Damascus Countdown. So, Joel, listen, you know, there's a few guys that I think are nuts in this world. Alex Jones from InfoWars, Jesse Ventura, who's been on my show before, and Rush Limbaugh. Now, Rush, he's endorsed your book. He says, Damascus Countdown is fantastic, intense action, blistering pace, and eerie how close it is to real events in the Mideast, especially with Iran so close to the bomb and Syria melting down. Rosenberg always keeps me riveted. You know, sometimes having an endorsement, you know, it's like Brian McLaren said to me that sometimes his endorsement is like the kiss of death for some books. But Limbaugh, is he a good guy to have in your camp? Because, boy, does he get, like, I just couldn't get wound up about as many issues as he does. And you Americans get wound up about so much.
Well, a couple things. First, Rush is a friend, and I used to work for him as director of research. And what's interesting about Rush is, you know, Canadian listeners may not realize he's the number one most listened to radio talk show host in the United States with 22 million listeners.
Yep.
Nearly two-thirds the size of Canada.
Yeah,
so,
Joel Osteen has a huge church with a lot of followers, and I'm not a big fan of his either.
Fair enough. I'm not saying that numbers count, but would you, in terms of being true, but in terms of impact, of listenership. And I think one of the things, Rush is not in the category of the other two that you mentioned.
Okay, all right. I'll give you that one, yeah.
He's a conservative political analyst, and he is, his interest is not primarily in the prophetic.
Yeah.
His interest is in the geopolitical, in terms of my books. And what he's intrigued with is how I'm writing scenarios that, you know, seem like they are, you know, foreshadowing things that either are or could be happening in a way that most political thrillers are interesting, hopefully, but not the type of things that you say, well, that could happen next week. That's just a distinctive, from his perspective,
yeah,
of my novels.
Yeah. No, I get that. And listen, and by the way, I have spoken to more people. Like, I have some pretty big names on my show, but when they find out Joel Rosenberg is on my show, they just get silly. They get silly, Joel. You've got a lot of followers.
The listeners or the famous people?
No, you've got a lot of fans, and you are forget all of the prophecy end time stuff that you happen to be right about, but you're a good writer. I mean, it is just a good read. You know, there's another guy that worries me a little bit. You were on his show a couple of weeks ago, Mr. Robertson. Pat Robertson said in his interview with you that your book starts out with a bang. I like that. You hardly open it up, and Israel is blowing the daylights out of Iran, which is great.
Well, look, let me be clear. Again, not everyone that interviews me, you know, shares my views on all these issues.
Yeah.
I don't want to see a war in the Middle East. However, with Damascus Countdown, the new novel, this is about what if an American president
gets it wrong,
miscalculates,
yeah,
with regards to Iran, and Israel does feel the intense need, not the desire, but the need to strike. What's the blowback look like? What does the retaliation look like? And given the fact that our president is going to Israel next week, in his first foreign trip of his second term, his first state visit to Israel, what are the top two issues on his agenda? Stopping Iran from getting nuclear weapons and then dealing with the implosion of Syria. I can't tell you, Drew, that when I began writing this series that ends with the Damascus Countdown, it started 4.5 years ago, that I had anticipated that Damascus Countdown would release the same month that the president would make Iran and Syria the top two issues, you know, in U.S. and international foreign policy. But that's where we are right now. Iran is dangerously getting close to nuclear weapons. There's obviously a difference between the Israeli assessment, how soon you have to deal with it militarily if everything else doesn't work, and the American assessment. I would note that, you know, the Prime Minister Harper is currently the most pro-Israel leader on the planet, certainly within NATO, but I would say worldwide. I'd be interested, you know, his take on how close he thinks this is. But my bottom line point is we're at a very interesting moment where I hope and pray that Israel and the United States do not feel they have to strike Iran. But the mullahs in Iran have their own end times theology. And it's not a passive view like a Christian view, which is, hey, bad things are going to happen in the end of days. It's a proactive view that radical Shia Muslims have, that they're supposed to cause horrible things to happen in the end of days. And that eschatology, that end times theology, matched with nuclear warheads and the ballistic missiles to deliver them, that is something that I write novels about, but is actually coming to pass.
Yeah, that's a little scary. Okay, so who should we be more afraid of? Iran, Syria, North Korea, or Quebec?
Well, the first three.
Yes, of the first three.
Well, and not the fourth.
No, yeah, no. The fourth one was a joke, Joel. Iran, Syria, or North Korea. Which one should we be more afraid of? Because there seems to be more chitter-chatter about nukes in North Korea right now than Iran.
Well, North Korea is a different novel of mine. That's a few years ago, 2008, with Dead Heat, in which a North Korean lunatic leader launches a preemptive military strike against four American cities. Both the Iran nuclear threat and the North Korean nuclear threat are now serious game-changing issues on the international scene. And one can't predict, I certainly can't, which one will go first. What's most concerning to me at the moment is how the two things are linked. In other words, North Korea just tested its third nuclear warhead just a few weeks ago. And it looks like a smaller warhead, but a larger yield, meaning more destructive than their first two tests. What's particularly concerning about that is that now North Korea isn't simply making threats. It may be able to deliver on them. Mm-hmm. But the second part is that who was present at the North Korea nuclear warhead test? Iran's chief nuclear scientists. And that suggests, it doesn't prove, but it suggests something that I'm writing fictionally about in Damascus Countdown, which that Iran is paying for, potentially, North Korea to be a research and development lab to essentially build and perfect the warheads that Iran can use without testing them on Iranian soil. And if that's the case, it would suggest that Iran is much closer to fielding operational nuclear warheads than maybe you and I even realize.
Okay, I want to finish this time. And by the way, Joel Rosenberg, always a great guest on our show because he just knows his stuff. And I'm the first one to admit I'm not Mr. Middle East. If you want Middle East journalism here in Canada and end time stuff, you want to talk to Michael Korn. He's a pretty smart cookie, not the Drew Marshall Show. But joelrosenberg.com is a website you want to go. And his latest book, which has just come out a couple of weeks ago, I think, was it not?
Just 10 days ago.
Yeah. Damascus Countdown. There's a couple of people that had a question on our Facebook page, and I want to bring to you this one guy who said a bunch of stuff, and I want to get your sort of general response to him, okay? So this guy named Mike says, because I posted, hey, do you have any questions for Joel? I almost called it Joel Osteen. Joel Rosenberg.
Please.
Sorry. Apologies for that. You don't have as nice of teeth as he does. Okay, so here's the question. How about why end times theology was not a mainstream belief until the Schofield Bible was made? Is it a healthy belief? Ignoring Israel's war crimes in Gaza, ignoring environment because it's all going to be destroyed anyway. If it's true, why would anyone look forward to the death and destruction of so many people in our world? I ask these because it seems to me that the end time stuff makes us complacent and far too focused on the future and getting out of here than working for justice, peace, healthy environment, and love in the here and now. You know, all the stuff God intended for our world. And it says, oh yeah, is it right to use the so-called prophecies to justify declaring war on a sovereign nation that has not made an aggressive move toward us? Would this not be in violation of the old commandment, you shall not murder? Joel Rosenberg.
Well, that's going to require a doctoral dissertation to,
Yeah, in 30 seconds or less, Joel, how do you answer that question?
Right. So, to cut to the core of what I think he's asking, two pieces. One, no, one should never be excited about looking forward to in any way the possible death and destruction with war. If war is needed to protect one's own country and one's allies, then one does it as a last case resort, looking for every other option. And so that's the first thing. No, I am not. Now, some people who are interested in Bible prophecy and the Middle East do seem gleeful, and that's just simply wrong. It's not biblical, and so that's the first thing. The second thing is, I believe that Bible prophecy is entirely designed to warn us of things that are happening in the future in order to motivate us to live in a godly way today. So as an example, my wife and I started an organization called the Joshua Fund in 2006 to provide food, clothing, medical supplies, and other humanitarian relief, both to Israelis in need, but also to Palestinians and those living in the country immediately touching Israel. In other words, Israel and her neighbors. Why? Because we don't know when the Bible prophecies about terrible wars in the Middle East will happen, but real wars are happening and may happen soon, and real people are struggling. And a Christian's responsibility is to love one's neighbor and to love one's enemy. And for us, prophecy motivates us to say, someday we're going to be standing before Jesus Christ face to face, and we don't want him to say, why exactly did you just write novels? Why didn't you go feed people who were hungry? Why didn't you give water to people who were thirsty? Why didn't you provide clothing and medical supplies? What were you thinking down there? Didn't you read the whole Bible?
Well said.
And I don't want to hear this. I want to hear, well done, my good and faithful servant. So it ought to.
Well done, my good and faithful servant. And by the way, I read your book. That's what Jesus is going to say.
Well, that's right. I read his. That's much more important.
Well done. Joel Rosenberg, listen, if we had any more time, I would ask you these questions. But I'm not going to ask you these questions, but these are the questions I was going to ask you. When's the world going to end? Why hasn't it ended yet? When was the last time you hugged a Muslim? Do you have any Palestinian friends or fans? How have they reacted to your books? Does God love Muslims? When will the U.S. invade Iran? Why haven't they or Israel done it already? Would Jesus invade Iran? Does God take sides in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict? And how can you be sure you're on the right side? Ladies and gentlemen, Joel Rosenberg here on the Drew Marshall Show. Damascus Countdown has released March 5th. You got to get it. It's the third one in that 12th of Mound series. And Joel, you're always a riveting guest. Thank you for putting up with my nonsense.
Well, it's an honor, and I'm sorry we didn't have time for the lightning round on those. But you email me them, I will tweet the answers.
Okay, all right. Good stuff. Thanks, Joel.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Joel Osteen on the Drew Marshall Show. Just kidding. Joel Rosenberg. We'll be right back.
Right. You patriotic, patriotic slam fight, right? I'm feeling pretty psyched. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. I feel fine.
10 years ago, after 5 years of pastoring in Australia, Drew Marshall moved back to Canada and, with absolutely zero broadcasting experience, walked into the studios of Joy 1250 and pitched the idea of hosting a talk show that was different. Canada's most listened to spiritual talk show is now listened to by over 100,000 people around southern Ontario and thousands more by Canadians coast to coast. On September 15th, 2012, the Drew Marshall Marshall Show will start Season 10. And as a thank you for putting up with Drew for 10 years, we've decided to cut all advertising costs by 10%. Doesn't matter which plan you're interested in. $12.50 specials, 10% off. One-day advertising package, 10% off. Our summer holiday special, 10% off. Or even our 15-week advertising package is now 10% off. To sign up for one of our 10-year anniversary advertising specials, contact us today at drewmarshall.ca.